Now, I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Jody R. from San Diego.
My name's Jody, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 16th, 1993. And of all the service commitments available in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to tell you that this is my least favorite. I try to stay willing to do what's suggested and not say no to any AA requests, but way out of my comfort zone. So I've decided that if I see anybody napping, I'm going to just assume you had too much turkey today. And it's nice to be here on this Thanksgiving weekend in a room of grateful alcoholics, and I'm grateful today that I'm a grateful alcoholic. I also want to welcome the newcomers and the people here from out of town. Okay, so here we go, God. And, you know, Kurt stole my story. So while he was up here, I thought, oh, he just told my story. There's no need for me to get up here and do this. But I guess nobody wants to go home yet. Okay, so my parents were born and raised in New Jersey, and they had my brother and sister in New Jersey. And they moved while they were pregnant with me, and we went to Albuquerque, New Mexico for a couple of years. I don't remember much about Albuquerque except that my dad loved it there. And we landed here in San Diego when I was 4 years old, and I lived in this neighborhood, and I went to this church. So this is, in fact, I stole from the drugstore down there and got into all kinds of trouble right here in this neighborhood. So feels good to be at home. Oh, I didn't start my timer. There we go. So my story is not very traumatic or dramatic, and since I try to live an honest life, I'm not going to make up anything to make it any more exciting. So I was the baby of the three kids, and we lived here with no real other family, so it was just the five of us. And we had a nice, tight little family, and I always knew I was loved, and I was born on my mom's birthday, so, you know, every year she would tell me I was the best present she ever got, and, you know, I was daddy's little girl, and my parents drank pretty much every night, but there was no fighting, there was no big drunk, you know, chaos. It was, you know, a really happy childhood. I also was, well, my older sister who's here tonight, my mom taught her all the things you need to know in life. She taught her how to cook and clean and do laundry and iron, and I don't know what she taught my brother. And then what she taught me was how to play. You know, I would play softball. I was a Girl Scout. I was a dancer. I went to tumbling. You know, I had no skills for life, but, you know, I could tap dance. So had that going for me. And, you know, life just went on. It was really good. I had a really happy childhood. And I come from a long line of alcoholics, and I knew that, but I didn't grow up with any of them because I grew up out here. And the first thing that I started to abuse when I was probably 10, 11, 12 was food. I found that if I chose to, you know, eat a box of donuts, it changed the way I felt. And I like that. You know, me and my girlfriend, we'd walk ourselves to church, we'd buy a dozen donuts, we'd sit in the back row over here, eat the whole box, and church was good. You know, it was exciting. So I did that for a couple of years, and I actually had my first drink at the end of my sophomore year in high school. I was at my field hockey party, and I was with the same girl that we did the donut deal, and I think we just drank that cheap old wine, that Boone's Farm stuff or whatever. And the first time I drank, I got drunk, and I liked it. And I remember when we came home, I was getting ready to go away for the weekend, so I had my suitcase all packed. And my girlfriend, I guess she drank too much as well, and decorated the whole bathroom as well as my suitcase, case of clothes that were all ready to go to my on my little trip. And you know what? What I remember about that night was my parents didn't say anything to us, you know. And I guess that was just the way things were, you know, that there's not a problem here. So, but my life also changed that moment, you know. Up until that time, I was, you know, a good student, a good girl. I didn't get into really any trouble. And, you know, that night, I went on a different path. And I didn't, I think it was right at the end of the school year, and I don't remember drinking a lot that summer. But when I went in for my my junior year of high school, you know, it was pretty much on. I wanted to party, and I didn't really care about anything else. And that first day of school, I went into my English class, and, you know, there was this boy in this class. He's just tall and blonde and tan, and I was in love. And he hung out with the stoners, so he was really cool too. And so I spent those first couple months of that year, you know, trying to party as much as I can at football games and so on and so forth, and whenever I could get the opportunity. And right before the Christmas break, my mom had just gotten out of the hospital. She had a bleeding ulcer, and she was getting out of the hospital that day. And a girlfriend and I, we went out, and we were playing at the Family Fun Center over here in La Mesa where it used to be. And the guys there were feeding us, I think it was Slow Gin and Fanta Orange. And they let me drive out of that place. And I didn't get very far. I ended up totaling my parents' car. And I remember I woke up the next morning, and my neck was kind of stiff, and I looked in the mirror, and I had these funny marks on my neck, and I thought, what is that? Is that a hickey? And I think, what happened last night? I had no recollection of any of it. And then I had this vision of being in a bathtub with my mom washing my hair, because the coolant, we flipped over, and really the only reason we didn't die was because we were so drunk. And my mom was bathing me, and I was crying. And, you know, I had nowhere to go for 2 weeks, and my parents were out in the kitchen, and I was in my bedroom. And I thought, oh, what am I going to do now? So I went out there, and I told them I was never going to drink again. And I meant it, you know, because I was scared. And then about 3 weeks later, that really cute boy that was in my English class asked me, and he wanted to go up to the snow with me and my friend and his friend. So we went. My parents let me go, and I got drunk again. And that really cute boy is now sitting right here in the front row as my husband. So it was on. I had this new boyfriend, and we liked to get drunk. we pretty much started drinking, and every time we drank, it was excessive, and most of the time it was fun, and many times it wasn't. And a few months after that, we were out up here on Lover's Lane up here in Del Cerro, you know, making out and drinking beer and throwing cans and, you know, carrying on. And the police came and took me home. And I think my parents really tried to figure out what was wrong with me. So they took me to this counselor, and they wanted to find out if I was an alcoholic. And what I remember about that appointment was that I was honest with the guy. I don't remember trying to feed him a line or anything. And after that appointment, he said, I don't think she's an alcoholic, but if she doesn't stop drinking, she's going to lose her virginity. And and he was right. So So, you know, I often wonder, like, if that guy would have known about alcoholism and said, absolutely, throw her in a treatment program. But today I know that I had to experience everything I had to experience to get to be who I am today. But I do think about that. So what was interesting about that point in my life was once this guy that we didn't even know said, no, she's not an alcoholic, like, nobody ever told me after that I had a drinking problem. Not one person ever mentioned that maybe I should think about not drinking. So life went on. My mom wanted me to have a good senior year, and my dad was really pissed at me. So they started, like, separating, and my mom and I moved into this apartment, and I thought it was all my fault, but I had a good time living in the apartment. And so this whole back and forth thing started going. My mom and I left, then we went home, then she left with my brother, and then they came home. And then one time my mom and dad actually moved out of our own house into an apartment and left me and my brother at home by ourselves. Yeah, and boy, did we have a good time. You know, we drank all the alcohol in the house, and it was fun. And then they wanted to come back. And I think that was the first resentment I ever had. I didn't know it was a resentment, but I was pissed. So I thought, well, what am I going to do now? I was about 20 at the time, so I decided maybe I'd go away to college. So I chose the party capital of the world and went to Chico State and furthered my drinking capabilities up there. I don't know how I graduated, but I did graduate. But I don't, you know, I just drank and drugged and ate my way through college. And it's, you know, but for the grace of God, how I got through that. So ended up coming back down to San Diego. In the meantime, Ron and I were doing this back and forth, you know, break up, get back together. It was, you know, he'd come over on the weekends and buy us kegs, and he was living in San Francisco, and it was just real chaotic and dramatic, and somehow we both ended up back down here in San Diego and went down for a little fun down in Mexico and came home pregnant. And, you know, I always, you know, we grow up and we think about Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and, you know, the guy on the white horse and, you know, and so when I, you know, Ron and I were talking about this, you know, unwanted pregnancy, and it was like, well, I guess we better get married. Yeah, I guess we better. And, you know, like, that was my Prince Charming. So my dad was not real happy with that, the latest of my pranks of, you know, he said, why don't you just do the right thing and go elope? Well, of course, I wasn't going to do that. I wanted to have a party. So we got married, and then we, you know, 5 months later, we had a baby. So I'm 24 years old. I'm married. I have this baby. I don't know how to change a diaper. I don't know anything because, you know, I was tap dancing and gymnastics, and I don't know how to care for anybody or cook or clean or do anything like that. So it was a lot of on-the-job training. So we did that, and then, you know, I thought, well, I really want to have another kid because, you know, if I only have one, who's going to play with that one? He needs a playmate. So thought, well, I better have another kid, and I'll do that. And it'd be nice if it had the same father, you know. So seriously, you know, like, I was already unhappy. I didn't know why. You know, I had no idea what was wrong. I just knew I wasn't happy, and it was all Ron's fault. So we have this other baby, and he's a crabby, crabby baby, crabby. Even his grandmothers didn't like him. We'd call and say, like, hey, we need to go somewhere. Can you watch Matt? And they'd say, well, how long are you going to be gone? Seriously. So what happened was we got this whole revolving door thing going in our house. You know, I'd be at home with the kids all day. He'd come home from work, and I'd say, here, and I would go. And, you know, it started out, I'd go to the gym and then have a few beers or whatever, you know. And so we got this, we started doing this in our family, you know, because it was just really difficult and really challenging. And through all this time, I'm just getting these resentments, and I don't know what to do with them. I don't even know I have them. I just know I'm not happy, and I have this huge hole in my soul, and nothing is fixing it. Nothing is filling it up anymore. You know, the drugs, the alcohol, the food, none of it is numbing me out anymore. So I think, well, maybe I should get a boyfriend. Maybe that'll help. So that's what I tried next, and I'm here to say that that didn't work either. What happened for me was that, you know, now I had to lie even more. So now I was drinking. I never knew if I was drinking because I lied so much or I was lying because I was drinking so much. And the double life and the guilt and, you know, and I didn't grow up that way. I grew up going to church and, you know, being a good girl with good morals. And so it got to the point where I couldn't even look at myself anymore. I had no self-respect. I had no self-esteem, no integrity. And I was dying, and I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea what was wrong with me. I truly thought it was him. So Ron was at home drinking, and I was out drinking, and we were just really not on a good path. And at some point, he finally had to, like, pull his head out of the sand and call me on my crap. And it wasn't real pretty. And I, you know, admitted what I was up to. And, you know, he told me that I needed to be out of the house by the time he got home from work. And so, you know, I remember my last drunk was my 33rd birthday. I made sure I was out of the house, had the kids with a babysitter before Ron even got home from work. And I went out and I was sitting with this group of people. And I actually had a moment of clarity. I was totally drunk. And I'm looking at these people I was with. And I thought, who are these people? I had no friends. I had no family. I didn't even like these people. And this is who I was out celebrating my birthday with. And I got home that night, and there were the token dozen red roses on the kitchen counter with a nice note from my husband. And, like, I woke up that morning, and I knew that I had to do something. I didn't know what, never even considered stopping to drink. I just knew that I was in big trouble and that I was married to a really good guy and I was on the verge of losing everything. So I had kind of this moment of clarity, but I didn't know what to do with it. So in the meantime, my mom and I were going to go out because we have this common birthday and we're going to go have dinner. And so I thought, well, I'll tell Mom that I'm in trouble and see what she has to say. We go out and we have this lovely dinner, and I wasn't going to drink because, you know, now I'm done drinking. But we ordered a bottle of wine, and I told her I was in trouble and that, you know, my marriage was falling apart and that I needed help. And she said, oh, you know, don't do anything yet, you know, give it some time or whatever. And when I got home from that dinner with my mom, Ron was just, he had had enough, you know, and he, you know, asked me what I'd been up to, and I told him, and we were up all night, and he told me to be gone the next morning, and so I went over and I stayed with my mom, and when I walked in her door, she asked me if I wanted a drink, and for some reason, I told her no. I had no idea that that bottle of wine with my mom was going to be my last drink. I had no idea. But I knew when she offered me that drink that a drink was not going to help, that it wasn't going to fix my problem. So Ron is like homicidal, suicidal, wants to, you know, get our family together, wants to kill me. It was crazy. So a friend of mine had been doing a little marriage counseling, so I asked him for the number of this counselor because Ron really needed some help. he was messed up. So he goes up and he sees this woman, and she starts asking him how much he drinks. And so he tells me that she wants him to go to an AA meeting. So I said, well, I'd be willing to go with you, you know, to support you. Then I thought, well, I think I'll go up and see this woman because I'll really let her know how to help Ron. So I go up. I think I had about 6 or 7 days that I hadn't had a drink, and I walked into this woman's office, and before I even sat down, she looked at me and she said, when was your last drink? And I told her it had been 6 days, and she said, you are an alcoholic. She said, 99% of your problems are due to the fact that you're alcoholic, and you need to be in a meeting today and in a treatment program. So I guess I was a mess. And I think I was in so much pain that I did what she said. You know, I got myself into API and did their outpatient program. And that night, Ron and I went to our first AA meeting. And I remember it was in Santee, and there were only about, 5 or 6 or 7 people in the meeting. And about 4 or 5 of them were like these 21-year-old boys. And they had it together. And like here we were, you know, 33-year-old adults with kids. And we were a mess. And I was so inspired by that meeting. I don't think I shared, but I know that the next morning, it was a Saturday morning, and I went to a women's meeting, and I brought my own Kleenex. And when they asked me to share, I just let it out. And I think I cried for about a year. I was in so much pain, and I had no tools for living. And went to a meeting the next day, and then I went to a meeting on a Monday night, and I walked into a women's meeting, and, you know, I instantly wanted what those women had. They were happy, joyous, and free. They were productive members of society. They were raising their kids, having fun. And I knew that I was home. And after that meeting, I think there was only about, it was 18 years ago, and the meetings were small, you know, so there was only like 12 women, and they say, we go out and we have coffee after the meeting. And so I went because I didn't know any better. So I went out and I had coffee with these women. And you know, they took me under their wing, and they showed me how to live a sober life. And I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. And they would read the steps, and I would see, you know, oh, God, it's about God. And I got scared because I didn't want to do God. You know, while I was coming to this church, I went regularly. And my sister and I, we even got ourselves baptized at some point, you know. But I never had it in my heart, you know, like whatever they were whatever I was learning was always in my head. And then when I started drinking, I didn't want to do the God thing at all. So when I saw that this was a God program, I was super, super scared because I didn't want to do the God thing. And I didn't know how to do the God thing. So I remember one of the very first phone calls that I made was to a woman to ask her how to pray, because I didn't even have a clue how to even start. And I don't even remember what she told me, but I do remember I picked up the phone and we had a conversation. And that woman never became my official sponsor, but she would spend hours with me in the parking lots, you know, after every meeting. And, you know, I know that she saved my life. I don't know if any of you know Sharon B., but she passed away a couple of years ago, and I think from this disease. But when I look back on that first year of sobriety, that counselor and Sharon and my sponsor, I know God sent them to save my life. So So my marriage, of course, is a mess, you know. So I kind of left my mom's house, came back home, but it was super uncomfortable. Ron's staying sober. I'm staying sober. We hate each other. I decide I'm going to go live with my sister for a couple of months. So I was about 30 days sober, and I went over to stay, and I slept on my sister's hide a bed. And I didn't have my house, and I didn't have my boys, and I didn't have my husband. And I think that was really good for me to see what my life would be like without my family. And I stayed with her for about 60 days, until Christmas. So in the meantime, I'm, you know, trying to figure out how to do the steps, how to find a God. Ron's trying to get sober, trying to not kill me. He's going to Al-Anon. It's just a mess. So my sponsor didn't know what to do with me either. So her and her sponsor took me out for breakfast one morning, and they cornered me into this little booth at D.Z. Aiken's. And they told me that I could make no major decisions. And they didn't even tell me for a whole year. They told me 6 months because I wanted a divorce so bad. And they told me I had to give this program 6 months. So I told Ron I was coming home. Well, you know, he had been, like, getting sober and going to Al-Anon and kind of decided maybe he didn't want me to come back home. So it was really challenging. This counselor, what she told us was she told us to get sponsors, work the steps, stay in our own corners, and once we heal ourselves by working the 12 steps, we'll see if there's any kind of a marriage to put back together. So that first year, we, you know, really tried. We had to stay in our own corners, and it was our kids were 6 and 8, and it was hard. It was super, super challenging. I'm in the income tax business, and so I have about, I don't know, 120 days of sobriety, and here comes tax season. So I remember one day I was, you know, sitting looking at a big pile of tax returns to work on, and my friend Sharon called, and she said, "We need to go do a 12-step call." And I said, "I can't leave. I have all this work to do." And she said, "I know, but, you know, your primary purpose is to stay sober and help others." And I said, "Yeah, but what about all this work?" And she said to me, she said, "I promise you, if you come with me today and do what we need to do today, that God will make sure that all that work gets done." So packed up my stuff and I left, and we went on some crazy 12-step call. And I stayed sober, and all those tax returns got done. You know, somehow or other, they all got done. So it was really important message for me to learn that no matter what, to keep first things first and keep my sobriety at the top of my list. So I'm working on my steps. I'm doing my fourth and fifth step. I don't know. I'm probably about 9 months sober. Got it all done. It was like a book. And so I have a date with my sponsor to go do my fifth step. And we're going to go to the Sunday morning meeting, and then we're going to go do it. And I'm, you know, like I was tonight, all off. So we go to the meeting. The meeting's over. And then she goes, "Oh, now we're going to go out and have breakfast with all these people." And I'm like, I just want to get it done. You know, I just want to get it done. So we get to her apartment, and I think I was there for about 10 hours. And we just talked and talked and talked, and I told her everything I could think of that I had done. And to the best of my ability, I did a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself, and I shared it with her that day. And then we read that part in the big book about, you know, is our work complete and are you trying to make mortar out of sand or, you know, that whole thing. And I thought, yeah, I did a really good job on this. And, you know, like I expected instant freedom. And it didn't come. And I was a little disappointed. So I remember about 4 days passed, and all of a sudden I felt lighter. You know, I felt better. I felt some freedom. And so, you know, we kept on doing the steps. We did a little 6 and 7 and, you know, made that 8-step list. And, you know, then it was time to do, you know, the dreaded 9th step. And I remember one of my first amends was with my dad. And we went to the Red Lobster and we were having lunch. And I remember... I remember sitting there and telling him everything I was sorry for. I am sorry for the time I did this. I'm sorry for the time I did that. And I went on and on and on and on and on and on. And he just sat there and he looked at me. And when I was done, he said, "Well, what about the time when you did this?" And so I go, "Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that too, Dad." And, you know, what I learned from that was that maybe I don't have to be so specific. You know, like maybe I can just do my 9th step from my heart and not have to, you know, do another inventory with everybody that I had harmed. And, you know, to go back just a little bit, when I was staying with my sister, because, you know, once I started drinking, I wasn't Daddy's little girl at all. He did not like any of the choices I was making. And I remember I was over at my sister's and my dad came over and he said, "Well, what's going on here? Did Ron cheat on you?" And I looked at him and I said, "No, Dad, I cheated on him." And I thought, "Oh, you know, there go some more points with my dad." And, you know, that day sitting in that Red Lobster, all of that went away. You know, and from that moment on, my dad and I were good. We were solid. And, you know, making those amends brought me more freedom. So I got a little addicted to that. You know, I wanted more of that. So, you know, finished up the steps with my sponsor. And I remember celebrating my first birthday. And my marriage was not good, but it was so much better. And I thought, okay, if it can get this much better in this short amount of time, I'm going to give it, you know, let's give it another year. So, so much had changed by the time I had 1 year of sobriety. I almost felt like I had all new skin, you know, like I had shedded all that old stuff and I was becoming a new person. And I liked it, you know, but it was also uncomfortable because there wasn't a whole lot of drama anymore. And I didn't quite know what to do with that. And someone had to tell me, you know, maybe that's serenity. Maybe that's what you're getting. And I thought, oh, that's what that feels like. So, you know, by the time I was 2 years sober, I was super grateful that, you know, that I didn't get that divorce that I wanted so badly. You know, my family had been reunited and things were going really well. And, you know, I loved sobriety and everything that it was, you know, how it was working in my life. And I did a lot of step studies and stayed connected with the girls, started learning how to have fun in sobriety, did some, you know, river trips with some crazy girls in AA. And, you know, because I thought without drinking, my life was going to be over. I had no idea how to have fun without drinking. So, you know, years 2 through 10 were pretty calm. You know, I got to spend those years doing step studies and making friendships and building my foundation and having fun and raising my kids. And it was just pretty calm. And then, you know, when I hit 10, life started to be giving me some life on life's terms. And I remember my oldest son was getting ready to turn 18. He was a senior in high school. And I could tell that he, I don't know the exact date. If I had a calendar, I probably could. But, you know, something changed. And, like, I knew he had started drinking. And you know, he was a senior in high school. And I was grateful that it took that long. And, I'm a big feeler. I don't know if any of you guys are, but I'm a big feeler. So, you know, he turned 18 in March, and
I cried, and I wrote him this big letter about being an adult and making good choices. And then he, Then he graduated high school, and I cried and I cried. And every meeting I went to, I cried about my kid being 18 and graduating and going off to college. And so then September comes, and he goes off to college, and I'm crying and I'm crying and I'm crying. And you guys are just telling me it's going to be okay. And that kid lasted one quarter and came home. So then I'd run into to you guys, and you'd say, how you doing with your son being gone? And I'd say, oh, he's home already. You know? And I told my kid, I go, I cried for longer than you were even gone. You know? And what I learned through that was like it was okay. You know, you guys didn't tell me, get over it. We're tired of hearing it. Nobody said that to me. You guys just loved me, you know, and let me have my feelings. And then the women, you know, that had come before me would say, oh, honey, they'll be back, you know. And I thought, well, but they just left, you know. And so he comes home, and then the other one's, you know, starting the drinking and doing his thing. And so then they both left again to go away to college, like within a month of each other. So I didn't cry for 6 months that time, but, you know, I was pretty weepy. And, you know, it hurt. Like, I didn't know who I was without being their mom. You know, I'd spent my whole life, you know, being their mom, and all of a sudden now I didn't have that to do. So I didn't know, I really didn't know what I was supposed to do with myself. And once again, you guys just told me, you know, it'll be okay. Like, just keep putting one foot in front of the other. So the kids go away, and then, I don't know, 6 months later, the dog died, and that was, you know, big feelings about that. And then 6 months later, you know, I got to watch my husband have a stroke, and there's big feelings around that. And then 6 months after that, my dad got sick. And you know, it was feeling like, you know, come on, God, this is a lot of life on life's terms. And you know, I didn't have to drink over any of it. You know, I just kept coming to my meetings and doing my steps and doing what I needed to do. And so my dad ended up having surgery during tax season. He had surgery on April 1st, and he died on April 13th, and we buried him on tax day. And, you know, by this time, you know, my dad was my biggest fan, and I knew that he had no intentions of ever doing that to me. But what I learned from that was what that woman had taught me so many years before that, was that the work will get done, you know. And so every day I went to that hospital and I sat with my dad for 3 or 4 hours. And I was with him when he died, instead of sitting at my desk doing that work. And somehow, some way, all that work got done and it was okay. So I'm really grateful that God tells me what's important, and I don't have to try to figure that out on my own. So the other thing I wanted to share was, you know, so now my kids are off at college, and they're following in their parents' footsteps, you know, and they're spending most of their college years the same way I was, you know, face down and not in a book. And, you know, like, I didn't have any tools. I didn't know what to do about that. So, you know, I also stand up here as, you know, a grateful member of Al-Anon. You know, I didn't know how to deal with my kids drinking. And so now I try to learn how to let them do what they need to do so that they can get where they need to get, and I don't have to try to fix them or save them or do any of that. And it's been really hard. It's been hard trusting that they have a God of their own. And I'm learning how to mind my own business, which, you know, works really well when I can do it. And you know, they both got through college somehow, I guess the same way I did, by the grace of God. And They're both living for 2 years now. They don't live with us, which has been lovely. So all those women that said, oh, honey, it's going to be okay, I totally understand what they're saying now. That empty nest, which was so scary, is now, you know, like a safe haven. When my kids say they're going to come home, I start crying now. Please don't. And, you know, like, I don't even remember how I fed them. You know, like, did I ever used to cook? Because now I don't even have to worry about that. So life is good, you know, or life is life. My mom has been sick for the last 3 years. She has actually been a hospice patient for the last 2 years, and it's been super, super challenging. And when I went to Al-Anon to try to learn how to deal with my kids and their drinking, you know, where that's really helped me now is how I'm dealing with my mom, because I don't know how to do it. And what I pray for is that I let my mom have her own journey and not the journey I think she should have, or do it the way I think she should. And it's been a long time. You know, it's exhausting. And I don't do it alone. I do it with all of you, and I do it with the steps and with a higher power. And I'm super grateful for that. I also try to just do my part. You know, I don't try to do it all. I just try to do my part, and I don't always know where that line is either in the sand. You know, I just have to stay in touch with all of you. So I'm super grateful for sobriety. I often wonder, well, I think if I hadn't gotten sober, I don't think I'd be alive, for one. Bless you. And you know, like, even with all this stuff that's gone on the last few years, like, inside I have some calmness, and I just don't know how I would walk through any of this without some peace and serenity. And, you know, when I got here, I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know it was a problem in my life. I really got here because my life was totally unmanageable. And every now and again, I think, well, maybe I'm not. You know, I'll read that part in the big book about husband number three, who's just a heavy drinker, and I think, oh, maybe I'm just a heavy drinker. And I think, well, my sponsor tells me I'd rather be in here by mistake than out there by mistake. And, you know, when I look at my drinking history, I'm an alcoholic. You know, the only time I ever had to hide my alcohol was if I didn't want him to drink it. Or, you know, like, I would put my recycling bin out for the trash man with, like, great pride, with all the bottles in it. You know, like, I don't think normal people do things like that. So what I know today is that I've earned my seat here, and that I claim my seat here. And, you know, by God's grace, I don't plan on ever giving up my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm super grateful to be here, and thank you for letting me be of service and sharing my story with you tonight.